This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Each and every day on the program, we welcome Chris Harrington to the program. Let's fire it up. Chris, what are we listening to?
It's Arizona Skies from Los Lobos, from their, I think, 1992 album, Kiko, for the Grizzlies as they depart Arizona in victory, heading to Los Angeles to wrap up their schedule ahead of the All-Star break.
What'd you make note of last night?
The Grizzlies are better than the Suns. I think we know that.
Yep. That was one of my big takeaways. I told George to start the show. We can talk about teams at the bottom that are scary. That team's not one of them that scares me.
No, they don't. And the weird thing is that Devin Booker just doesn't – I mean, he had an okay game. I think he had 17 points, 9 assists or whatever, but I sort of barely noticed him out there. It's almost like Devin Booker has become Bradley Beal.
Yep.
You know, he's sort of a guy a little bit. And I think he should be better than that. Durant is just frightening as a scorer, but they just don't have enough otherwise. And so – it seemed like at one point the Grizzlies were just going to roll off on that game, and that didn't happen. But it can be hard to do that on the road against when you're playing against Kevin Durant on the road. But the Suns just don't have the depth of talent. And for all the consternation we have about the Grizzlies, not being as good as OKC or maybe Boston, who they've beaten, but we'll see them again. Cleveland, they haven't played yet. In terms of that very top tier, they have the fifth best record. Are they really a top five team? Or are they more like the eighth, ninth, tenth best team? I think that's a real question people have. They are at least that. It's sort of a reminder that, the Suns are not – they weren't playing the Wizards or the Hornets last night. You're on the road against a 500 team with a star player, and you're just so much better than that team. And so it's a little bit of a reminder of, there may be doubts about exactly how good the Grizzlies are, but they are pretty good.
I think that's an interesting question, because Windhorst said this on the trade deadline special that ESPN ran, that he was reporting that a lot of the teams that are at the bottom part of the standings, they look up and they don't really fear these teams. And I'm sitting there going, well, they thought the same last year and most of them got bounced. But I was thinking about it in these terms. Teams that are below the Grizzlies in the standings that you think the Grizzlies do not want to see in a playoff series, who are the teams that you would think about?
I'm trying to pull up the standings here. There is no team below the Grizzlies in the standings. Well, I mean, a lot of teams are below the Grizzlies in the standings. Everyone but Oklahoma City,
yep.
Right? I mean, there's structurally speaking, the Grizzlies, the last two times they've lost in the playoffs, they lost to the Lakers when they were the higher seed. They lost to the Warriors when they were the higher seed. It was less about specific matchup stuff. Then they just sort of got outclassed in the moment by teams and players who had been there before. And it's it was a case of the regular season is one thing and the playoffs are another. And this team has Steph Curry or this team has LeBron James. And so until you get over that hump, you wonder about that. If you're in a playoff series, you look across the floor and that team's got LeBron James and Luka Doncic, or that team's got Nikola Jokic, or you know, that team has a healthy Kawhi Leonard, which who knows if we'll see that. It's more of those kind of players that I worry about than like the structure of teams from a matchup standpoint. I think the Grizzlies have enough versatility, enough balance of offensive defense, enough versatility in being able to play big, to play small, to play different kind of stuff, that it's not really matchup stuff in terms of the way teams play that I would worry about. It's more like, are you going to get into a playoff series and like, you're better than the Lakers across 82 games, but across seven, they have Luka Doncic and LeBron James. And that's just different. It's more that kind of stuff I would worry about.
Yeah, because it's interesting. Like, if you take those two series in particular, yes, they get beaten six. But what we've kind of seen in this era of the playoffs is a lot of these series between competitive teams, they're going six or seven games, but there's not a ton of competitive games. But you think about game one against the Warriors, Ja has the tough layup at the rim, tough angle, can't finish the play. Like, that's kind of the game that ends up swinging the series because the Warriors flip home court advantage. And then you think about it in the Lakers series, like the way that game six ends, I think, clouds everybody. But I thought that series came down to, I mean, I guess you could make the argument Rui Hachimura in game one, but that's fine. But really what I think about is in game four, when the Grizzlies have a fourth quarter lead and it's basically down to one possession, they couldn't close it out and then they get beaten overtime. Like, that's kind of how these series have been going the last few years.
Yeah, and so, you know, I my head is not really in the, like, playoff matchup portion of things yet. I probably need to start getting there. As we get past the All-Star break into that, you're going to get into the playoff positioning stuff. And that's where, like Drew Hill and I have been talking about it, and we both agree that the Grizzlies need to try to stay in the 2-3, that it's important to be in the 2-3 and try to avoid OKC until you get to a conference finals. But he has been much more, the Grizzlies need to be 2. And I sort of shrug at that just because I don't know yet. Like, I don't – yeah, you'd get a home court advantage in the second round, but I don't know what the difference of that in 2 versus 3 means in terms of a first-round matchup, right?
Yeah.
I don't know who the different opponents are. I haven't thought enough about, like, would you really rather play the Clippers or the Wolves? Part of that is, like, you got to tell me whether Kawhi Leonard is healthy, like, in mid-April, which we don't know yet. And so – I'm sort of, right now I'm in the standpoint of the Grizzlies who just try to win as much as they can and stay in that 2-3 somewhere. And in terms of, like, as you really get close to the end, you start to think about, do we want to try to manipulate this to get a specific matchup, which the Grizzlies as a franchise have done before. The year they beat the Spurs in 2011, and when they were the 8-1 upset, the Grizzlies weren't really an 8. They were a 6 with 2 games left, and they basically tanked their way to an 8 because they wanted the Spurs. Sometimes when you get down to the very end, you start to think about that specific matchup stuff. But I think we just got to get closer to that point to really hone in on that.
What'd you make of last night, the Grizzlies kind of closing with Vince Williams Jr.?
It's the same lineup. They closed with Vince and with Santi Aldama. And that is the same lineup. It's not the lineup they closed with against Oklahoma City because they had Vince Williams on a minutes restriction, which they still do. But they just sort of ran through his minutes and pulled him. But it's the same lineup that they got back into the game with. Against OKC, they started the fourth quarter with that lineup. Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Vince Williams, Santi Aldama, Jaren Jackson Jr. They started the fourth quarter with that lineup against OKC, went on like a 13-4 run or something like that, and really got back into the game. But then it didn't last. It felt like last night they made a point to change the rotation up to cycle to that at the end. Like, they were still only going to play Vince Williams, whatever their minute restriction was, less than 20. But they organized it in a way that they could have him for the end of the game, I think maybe once the game was sort of close there. And so, I think that is a likely, like, primary lineup for the Grizzlies in the playoffs. I don't know if it'll be the starting lineup, but I think as you cycle through your rotations and you get to what you think your best lineup is, I think it's either going to be that, or in some matchups it might be Brandon Clark instead of Santi Aldama. But I think that's where things are headed. I think you're going to have your big three. I think Vince is going to become the primary wing, and you're going to choose between Santi Aldama and Brandon Clark, depending on the matchup and how guys are playing in that game. And I think that those six players are going to end up being the primary six for the Grizzlies in the playoffs. But you're going to play more. Like, Luke Kennard's going to play, Jalen Wells is going to play, Zach Edey's going to play. maybe one or two other guys, maybe Scottie Pippen, maybe J.J. Jackson. But I think if you really hone down into like where the main minutes are going and where the what the crunch time lineups are, I think I sort of think those six guys are going to be the main six.
I think the other thing that kind of stood out to me, and I didn't know whether or not to say that it was a style of play because I felt like the tempo was very much to the Grizzlies' liking last night, but I felt like we saw the version of Ja Morant last night was the type of version that they need. Like when we were talking about, okay, like we can talk about all these other rotational questions, but like really what it comes down to is like what version of Ja Morant are you going to get? I felt like last night was a glimpse at, okay, that version is the version that they need.
Yeah, that was a good Ja game, I thought, in particular. And it would have been better if he would have made one or two threes.
Yeah.
Like he'd actually been shooting the three well the last several games. He was 0 for 5 last night. So you take the same game and give him one. Give him 1 of 5, right? Or give him 2 of 5. Then suddenly, like, you're looking at around a 30-point game with what he was doing. I think what was noticeable from the jump in that game is that he was getting into the lane and then, like, pulling up for floaters and short jumpers. It wasn't, I think, what you saw against OKC and what you saw against New York, where he was intent on getting all the way to the rim and then getting contact. And he's not making the shot. He's not getting the call. And he's arguing with the referees. And it sort of gets him out of rhythm. He got back into the, I can get past the first line of defense. I can get into a little pocket of space. I can make a shot. And that's, like, that has been Ja Morant for a lot of his career. And it seems like it's gone away from that lately. Like, I've heard people say this season, you know, Ja's got to develop a floater. And my response is, Ja's got a floater. Like, we've seen this. We've seen him, like, go for 40 shooting floaters, you know? And it seems like he's been so intent on trying to get to the rim in some of these games, it's sort of throwing him off. And in that game, he was really getting into the pockets. He was making shots. He was balancing scoring and playmaking. It was a good, solid, all-around Ja Morant game. And if you get that kind of Ja Morant, you know, I think that is what the Grizzlies need, that kind of balance and that kind of rhythm that he was playing with.
Also, what last night showed me, and I'm not making one game a microcosm of the season, but it's just kind of like you start to see patterns. I thought the Grizzlies were very good rebounding the basketball last night, like, and not even in the traditional, like, okay, underneath, but like I thought they were very good attacking the basketball and long misses. And you just realize how important that is for them because they just get the defense out of position because they can just go at a speed that so many of these other teams can't.
Yeah, I mean, they had 20 offensive rebounds, which was big. And I think, I mean, that was a game, and they haven't had many this season because of the injury stuff. But I think the three best rebounders, I'm even talking about, like, the rebounding stats. So if you just ask like, who – rebounding as a skill, like, who are the best rebounders on this team? My answers would be Zach Edey, Brandon Clark, and Vince Williams. And, like, they were all in the rotation playing significant minutes. They were all playing well, at least as a rebounding standpoint. Edey had some problems finishing around the basket, which is frustrating. But, like, he's a force on the boards. And Brandon Clark, I think, had a really strong game. That's what you want to see in the playoffs is that kind of Brandon Clark. 14.7 boards in 19 minutes. Like, yes, please. And then Vince Williams gets 9 boards in 17 minutes. I think those three players are the players who are going to be the biggest factors on the boards for the Grizzlies. And when you have those kind of guys as role players, like doing that stuff to support your three stars, I think that makes the Grizzlies more dangerous.
How long do you think it is before we start to see Vince's minutes ramp up?
You know, I don't think it'll be tonight, certainly, second half of a back-to-back. And then you have the All-Star break. And so, in some ways, that almost works against it, too, because
right,
now you have
you're not playing
in
basketball.
10 days
you're just,
or whatever.
You're taking time off, usually.
Yeah, and so I think it's going to be a few weeks. But I think it'll gradually pop up. Like, I think he'll cross the 20-minute mark sometime, you know, probably not tonight and probably not the first game back from the break, but maybe soon thereafter. And so I think he'll cross the 20-minute mark, and by the time, you know, you're starting to get – into mid-March, I think you'll probably see him like hitting the 30-minute mark. And then my question is going to be, are they going to ever flip it and make him a starter? Jalen Wells actually, I think, was pretty good last night. He had the foul trouble. That lowered his minutes. He would have had more than 19 if not for the fouls. You know, made a shot, 2 of 5 from the floor. I thought he was pretty good. But I just think, I think a lot of people, including I suspect the coaching staff and the front office, as high as they are in Jalen Wells, looks at this and says, you know, Vince Williams is the guy we're going to lean into more when the playoffs comes.
And I guess that's kind of the other thing that like I was thinking about last night, because Vince's shot off the side of the backboard was laugh out loud funny. Like there is kind of the offensive trade off.
Well, I didn't like the shot he took.
Yeah.
The shot off the backboard was kind of bad. He was a little bit out of spot, out of rhythm with that. The one I didn't like, and it was wide open, it was an obvious shot to take, except he was wide open for a reason. And that was the last three he took. And it was like in the last 2 minutes of the game, the game's tight, the ball kicks out to him, and he is wide open. And normally that's a good shot, and that's a shot they are coached to take. But in that moment, I think there was still a lot of time on the clock. He had not been shooting well. I think they could have gotten a better shot at that point. And so we'll see where the offense comes. The thing that I like is that he is routinely impacting, and I mean, he's only played six games. But if you look at the numbers, like the net rating and his minutes is like by far the best on the team, which is sort of a pattern with him. But it's a pattern, even though like he has not been full strength in a single game he's played. And I don't think he's never going to be a big time scorer, but he's going to be whatever his shooting percentages are right now. Like they're going up, you know, like they're going to go up over the course of the season. So the fact that he is impacting team success to the degree that he is, even though I don't think he has, you know, gotten fully into shape and rhythm yet, I think is a good sign.
No, it's to your point. And I know you say this about Melton too. When he's on the floor, things happen. Like there was like a chaotic sequence where he gets his hands in a passing lane, and I want to say maybe like it ends up with like Jaren stealing the ball back at half court. But it's like when he is on the floor, things happen. And to your point about his rebounding, I mean, 9 rebounds in 16 minutes, and like he attacks the basketball when it's off the rim. Like it's noticeable. Things happen when he's on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, he is the kind of player I have to acknowledge, like, we all have our biases stylistically, and that is, you bring up Melton, like, he is the kind of player I tend to have a bias for. He is a Melton Cal Anderson type, but I like those guys for a reason. Not all rebounds are equal. And a lot of times, I think rebounding stats tend to be a little overrated for individuals, because a lot of times it's just like the ball comes to you or whatever.
Yeah, who's closest to the basket?
He is a guy very much like Melton, who will get rebounds otherwise that don't get gotten.
Yes.
You know, like he'll get rebounds like he's not supposed to get, you know, and he will create deflections and disruptions that will end up swinging plays. And it'll be you get 2 points and the other team gets 2 points. And he makes those kind of catalytic plays. He makes plays that otherwise don't get made. And I think that, and I wrote about this with Melton back in the day, because Melton was the same thing. Like his impact numbers were greater than his individual numbers. And when that happens, it can be one of two things. It can be there's noise in these numbers that are distorting what players really are, and they're not actually as good as the numbers suggest, just because there's other noise involved. And that happens a lot, by the way. But sometimes it goes the other way, and it's that. The players are doing things that are not reflected in their individual stats that lead to team success. And I always thought that was the case with Melton. I thought the team impact stuff was real with him, even when his individual stuff wasn't as strong. And I do think that's the case with Vince Williams.
All right, we'll close here. When we were talking about things that were, you know, that you're going to get around to, I do feel confident in this. A team beneath the Grizzlies that I do not want to see in the first round. To your point, like if the standings were to flip and the Nuggets pass the Grizzlies but the Clippers stay at six, that 3-6 game is not exactly a matchup that I welcome. When you watch tonight, again, it's the second night of a back-to-back. It's a one regular season game, but like that to me is just a matchup that I think they're so physical. Ty Lue's such a great coach. Like that is not one that I would welcome in round one.
Well, Zubac has been their center, who is, I think, one of the most underrated players in the league. And
Hasselton loves him.
I always butcher his name, but Vika Zubac, I think.
I don't know if it's Zubac. Like it's one of those ones where you start to get into kind of the Baltic pronunciations, and I never know if it's Ock or Ick or Itch. Like, you know.
I think there's a Chich, Itch or whatever at the end. I mean, I think the first name I'm more thrown off by. But regardless, he's really good. He's one of those underrated players in the league. Like, he's really, if you drill down into it, he should probably be on the fringes of, like, an all-NBA discussion this year. It's just that his scoring, he only averages, like, 15, 16 points instead of 22 or whatever. But, like, his impact is immense. And he always gives the Grizzlies problems. And it's the kind of thing where it feels like Evie's not quite ready for that guy yet. Like,
yeah.
Hopefully he will be next year and the year after, but he's not quite ready yet. And in fact, that guy is who Edie could be, right? If you want to look at a model of what Zach Edie can be, like, that's a good guy to look at. But that guy wasn't that as a rookie either. And so it feels like almost like Edie's not quite ready for that guy. And the Grizzlies are just too small to deal with him if you don't have Zach Edie out there. So I think that guy's a huge problem. I think Tyronn Lue in a playoff series is a problem. But the wild card is like Kawhi Leonard. Because if Kawhi Leonard is the best version of himself, like, you don't really have, like, as much as I like Vince Williams, as good as Jalen Wells has been, it's sort of like Durant last night.
Yep.
There's some guys you just sort of can't guard if they got it going. And he's and Kawhi is one of those guys.
Chris, we really appreciate it. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, thanks.
That is Chris Harrington over at the Daily Memphian. He has his game recap. You can go read that as well over at dailymemphian.com. When we come back, Sam Hardiman joins the program. We'll discuss the latest civic news with him. We'll do that next right here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy.
Yeah. Sam Hardiman is the government and enterprise reporter for the Daily Memphian. He's a proud graduate of the Missouri School of Journalism. Heard of it? You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at Sam Hardiman. Sam, we are going to get into the civic issues, but I prepped you for this. Are you a Pats fan that is now taking pride in the fact that, yet again, the Kansas City Chiefs lose in a Super Bowl, lose in blowout fashion? Does this somehow make the Patriots dynasty even more special than what the Chiefs have accomplished?
I have a lot of buddies in a lot of group chats who would say yes. I think my sort of contrarian nature tells me no, right? I don't think you should make the apples to apples comparison yet, because like the it's so early for Patrick Mahomes. At the same time, I think and Mike Sando had a great piece in this and The Athletic on Monday, which pointed out a really key number, which is Andy Reid's age for the Chiefs. Andy Reid is 66 years old. When the Patriots lost the 07 Super Bowl, the David Tyree catch, holding it to his helmet, right?
Yes, one of the greatest days of my life. Continue.
One of the greatest days of your life. Yep. Yeah, I'll continue. I'll continue talking about it. Bill Belichick was 55 years old, okay? So that's a huge difference. It's an 11-year age gap, right? And so, what is the runway on Andy Reid? Are we talking about 76-year-old Andy Reid still coaching the Kansas City Chiefs? I would put money – obviously, no one would put money on that happening. But, that's where I'm at, right, is what happens next for the Chiefs, I think, is going to determine whether they reach the pantheon that, the Brady-Belichick years are. Because I think you could argue that this, 5-6 year run was maybe better than anything that any 5-6 year run that Brady and Belichick had. It's just a matter of what is the whole body of work going to be.
Yeah, so I'm in a weird spot because I feel my guy gets snubbed on Thursday, Eli Manning, of course, and so I'm in this weird spot where part of the Eli case is. He slayed the dragon that is the Patriots. And so the Patriots being in a better possession or a better position only strengthens the case of Eli. But this would be the other point that I would make. So the Giants win in the 2011 season. That's Eli's second Super Bowl. So if you go since 2012, this has always been my argument, is that people don't realize how crappy the Giants are as an actual franchise. The Giants have the fourth fewest wins, and they're tied for the fewest playoff appearances since that time. And they are closer to the Jaguars. They have 15 more wins than Jaguars, who are dead last, than they are the Detroit Lions, who have 100 wins in that time. They have nearly double more wins than the Giants in that time. I don't think people truly understand. The Giants franchise is basically this in the modern football era. They sucked and got Lawrence Taylor. They were good. They sucked again, and they had a weird the year where they go and get slaughtered by the Ravens in the Super Bowl. That was kind of like a nobody was good in the NFC year, and they kind of backdoor their way in. And then they suck again. They get Eli, and they were a respectable franchise that got two unbelievable playoff runs, and then they've sucked ever since. That's kind of – Eli should be graded on a Detroit Lions curve. When we always give Stafford the benefit of the doubt, Eli should get the same benefit of the doubt.
That's fair. Yeah, Eli should definitely be in the Hall of Fame. As as a Patriots fan, it would make me feel better if he was in the Hall of Fame, right? You are getting rewarded for the pain you gave me, right?
Yes, no, we should lock arms.
I think is fair. Yeah, I'm with you. I thought it was silly. I thought it was a silly thing. I thought he handled it really well. I was glad he won the fake kick of destiny thing. And those are my Eli takes, which, you know, very high end. This is what they pay me for.
Yeah, the reason why it hurt for me is, all right, they were going to announce it in New Orleans, his hometown. Like, how many times is that going to happen? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you actually could get announced you're going to be a Hall of Famer in your hometown. And then when you start to look at the guys that are coming up, and if this pattern is going to continue of these smaller Hall of Fame classes, that's where it starts to get more and more difficult. So, like, I kind of realized, like, I'm probably going to be sitting here waiting for a while.
Could be.
Well, there's nothing better than the Hall of Fame induction weekend, though. As a fan, it's awesome because, like, you just get to relive all of the best moments of your sports life for, like, that entire weekend. And it's a weekend that's, like, right before football gets going. You're lusting for football. And so you're just watching all of the games that made you so happy when you were young. It's like, now I'm going to have to wait a really long time for that. Maybe never.
Don't say never. Everything comes back around. Everything comes to an end. Everything starts again.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's likely to get in. I just also think I've always believed the he's not a first ballot versus he is a first ballot is dumb. Like, he's a Hall of Famer or he's not. Like, it always drives me insane when we wait 10 years and now a guy's a Hall of Famer. He didn't play any more games. Like, how is his resume any different now than it was then? You just decided, like, well, I guess it's time. It's like, it's like just, I feel like it's this weird power trip that, like, voters have.
Yeah, agreed. And on the voter front, like, this is, like, my take, and, you know, in general, is, like, we're not very good at this. Like no. The voters, you know, whether it's the writers, whether it's somebody else, like, they're just not good at it. Like, this is, like people who get in, it's like, congrats to you. You likely deserve it. But those who are doing the judging aren't very good. And so, like, it's almost like it's not a very efficient process.
No, it's not. All right, let's get to some civic issues. So the governor has released his budget for the upcoming year, and something that I think is very important to the Grizzlies and to those downtown, money for downtown safety is included. What can you tell me about what is in the budget that pertains to Memphis and is important?
Yeah, so the governor released the massive state budget, you know, about a $60 billion budget, billion with a B here, everyone, okay? So it's a massive budget. This is a very big, it's a big state, you get a big budget, right? But included in that giant budget book, which I went through on Monday night, is $175 million for what is called a downtown safety infrastructure program.
Okay.
And so to make that clear to everyone, this is not $175 million for Memphis. It doesn't say for Memphis on it. Okay. It is a grant program. Okay. Which means that municipalities would apply. Okay. And what I want to read for everyone is Mayor Paul Young's, and let me pull it up here because I wasn't counting on reading it. And then I decided I was going to read it. So I mean, give me a second.
Okay, you want Paul's quote at the end of your story?
Yes, I do. I would like that. Yes, thank you, Jeffrey.
Quote: While we don't yet know all of the rules and guidelines, it certainly looks like something that could help us advance our efforts.
Right, and so that is very, very, you know, brief statement. Not a lot there, but what I want to say is that did not get included in the state budget by accident. It did not likely been included without discussions with the city of Memphis, without discussions with other interested parties, maybe the Memphis Grizzlies. And so this is a part of the process. Like, we've talked a lot on this radio program about what it's going to take to get a Grizzlies lease done. There is essentially a lot of public financing in place for renovations to the actual arena, the taxpayer-owned home FedEx Forum. What there isn't yet, and this is a step towards, is some money for safety and security improvements downtown. And anyone who's been going to games this year will notice that it's a pretty much night and day difference from last year in terms of the sort of prevalence, right, of Memphis police officers around FedEx Forum.
Yep.
Like you literally, like, think you're walking in and it's like there are roadblocks. It's, you know, I live downtown. Like, I, you know, it's much harder for me to get home at certain times now because of all this. That is going to be enhanced over time. That is going. The city is literally building a new downtown command center for this, right? They're putting taxpayer money into that, and so what's really happening here is this is the next step, is provided this money stays in the budget, because budgets are amended. This is a proposed budget. Okay. But provided this money stays in the budget and some of this money comes to Memphis, that is another check mark on the path to a second long-term Grizzlies lease, is how I would describe it.
Okay.
And, go ahead.
Well, to be clear, so essentially this is like a $175 million pool of money that's set aside statewide. So theoretically, lots of cities could apply for this grant. Am I understanding it correctly?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So I think the other question though, that I have is, like, I know the Grizzlies, as part of this, is they want to see more development downtown, whatnot. Obviously, that's not coming from this money, but are they wanting state help there, or are they wanting private business, you know, private developers to step up? I guess that's kind of the other question that I've always had.
Yeah, so I would answer it this way, right? Like, this is not money for that. This is not money for private businesses, okay? This isn't going to encourage development, right? But what is going to encourage development is the perception of safety in downtown Memphis. Like, first, as someone who lives here, downtown Memphis is quite safe on a day-to-day basis, okay? Like, this is not a place that is, you know, teetering on the brink, okay? But the perception of safety, like, every time you say have a, you know, Grizzlies game, we've had this recently, and definitely in the past year, right, where a bunch of cars get broken into during the game,
yep,
right? And people who came in from other neighborhoods who don't often come downtown, right, they don't want to experience that. And they're not going to think, you know, sort of rationally to themselves, well, if I got my car broken into once, it's pretty unlikely to happen again, right? But that's how it works. So to answer your question about private development, Jeffrey, this is something that could encourage private development, right? This is something that could encourage those who have capital, or sort of maybe waiting on the sidelines to deploy that capital, to put it downtown. And then the other thing I would say, and the mayor, and we broke this news on the Daily Memphis sort of at the turn of the year, is one of the things the Grizzlies are interested in, the mayor has said this, is Beale Street. Okay, the Grizzlies are interested in what the long-term future of Beale Street looks like. Well, the mayor is currently analyzing what does the long-term future of Beale Street look like. Okay, so those are things that I think, what I would say is, this is not like a watershed moment. It is just another thing that sort of adds momentum to a rock rolling down a hill. And that rock rolling down the hill is the Grizzlies' long-term future in Memphis. It is adding momentum. It is something that is going to make that long-term future more likely, and less in another thing that is unlikely to stop it.
Also included in the budget was $20 million for the zoo. How would the zoo like to use that money?
That's unclear. And you know,
did that surprise you to see that included? I should start with the first question. Did it surprise you to see that was included?
No, it doesn't surprise me to see something like that included. And I'm not, so like, for people, again, this is around a roughly $60 billion budget.
Yeah.
There are sort of tons of and this is, both of these things are called miscellaneous appropriations, right? There are certain tons of projects that, you know, people throughout the fall, this is what happens in the fall every year in Tennessee, and because the budget comes out this time, late winter, during the fall, people are going down to the governor's office and they are pitching him on their pet projects, okay? And if you're successful, just like Jim Strickland was, you know, now 2 years ago, 2 years ago, when he went down there and asked for $350 million for stadiums, you see your money in the governor's budget, right?
Yep.
The city of Memphis saw their money in the governor's budget right away. The zoo has likely been pitching, I don't know this, been pitching, because they have a serious infrastructure project they want to do at the zoo.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, the zoo is out of my bailiwick right now, but no, I'm not surprised by this. The Nashville Zoo, for its part, also got $20 million, okay, in the proposed budget. So, like, these things sort of, these allocations happen on a yearly basis. It's just a matter of, like, how often do they get reported, because how often do people really go through the budget?
No, I think that's more than fair. Okay, and then another topic that has been certainly in the news is a proposal for either improvements to the jail, a new jail. Where do we stand? Because I see we actually have a bill that was presented bipartisan. We have John Gillespie, the Republican, and I'm going to, can you please help me out?
Ramesh Akbari, State Senator Ramesh Akbari.
Ramesh Akbari, they've presented a plan. Where does that stand?
Yeah, so it's going to, so we reported this out yesterday of a Daily Memphis fan. I did that this is an old proposal that died last year. So to explain to everyone, people, the sales tax rate for a second. Right now, if you go buy a soda in downtown Memphis, okay, you're going to pay 9.75% sales tax.
All right.
Okay, 7% of that 9.75 belongs to the state of Tennessee. Okay, that's the state's money. The other 2.75% belongs to Shelby County and the city of Memphis. Okay, and that is the highest legally the sales tax rate can be anywhere in Tennessee is 9.75, because the local option, that 2.75 that I just talked about, is capped at 2.75. What this bill would do is it would ask the Tennessee General Assembly to make a special exception in state law and let the Shelby County, Tennessee, expand its local option sales tax to 3.75%. Okay, so that extra 1% that's being proposed, keep in mind, voters, if this passes the General Assembly, which it may not, okay, it didn't pass last year. This passed the General Assembly. It would have to go to Shelby County voters, okay? And how are Shelby County voters going to feel about taxing themselves for a new jail? But this money, which would be considerable, it'd be a 1% on the sales tax rate countywide, which is probably about $200 million a year, according to the state's fiscal estimates, more than $200 million a year. This money would be used to retire the debt for a new jail. And as, you know, my colleagues at the Daily Memphian have reported, as Lucas Vinton of the Commercial Appeal continues to do very good work on, in terms of the jail, 201 Poplar is in shambles, okay? The jail that currently exists is not very good. People are dying in the jail. The escalators do not work between specific floors. So that means if guards are responding to an emergency,
yeah,
they have to run up those escalators, okay? Which means your VO2 max needs to be pretty high to be effective in those situations. And so this is a proposed funding solution for building a new jail. But what I would say to people is, A, you have to vote on it. So it's going to be your choice if it passes the Tennessee General Assembly. And then also, what this should really illustrate to people is how cash-strapped Memphis and Shelby County really is. Because the option right now to build a billion-dollar-plus project, okay, that is not FedEx form. The option right now for something the community really needs is to raise the sales tax, okay? And to get a special exemption to raise sales tax to a very high level, okay? That is what we're talking about. And so that should tell you that the legacy sort of debts of Memphis and Shelby County don't allow either government right now, and the city of Memphis would not be paying for this, but for Shelby County, then their burdens, their long-term liabilities, do not let them pay for this really any other way. And so that should be telling for people.
Okay, I didn't tip you off that I was going to ask you about this, but this is something that just popped into my mind. Admittedly, I do not have, like, the Elon Musk derangement syndrome. Like, I think he's I don't have a picture of him on my wall. I think he's a business person that tries to make money. So I'm kind of Elon neutral, I guess is what I would say.
Okay.
This is where I struggle. Are there legitimate business, and when I say business, I really mean revenue generating. Like, I look at things that you've written about, the entertainment district that was supposed to, you know, we poured money into that, hopefully to generate sales so that we could get tax revenue and we could generate more revenue. I just really struggle with all the pushback because it's unclear to me at this point. It's like, maybe he is going to pull the rug on us, whatnot. But it's like, this seems like something that at least could generate money for Memphis. And I'm really struggling as to all of the public blowback, because it seems to me that it's not rooted in business. It's more rooted in they don't like the guy.
You're asking, you know, the public blowback both on XAI, but also their proposal to build a gray water plant on after the city sells them some land.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I would say this, right? You know, first, you know, what I say to people all the time when they ask me about Elon Musk and Elon Musk's plans for Memphis is to read international business media as much as you can.
Yes.
Because, like, the game that Elon Musk is playing, Memphis is a very small pawn in. Right? Like,
yes,
we are the place where he has chosen to sink billions of dollars in investment. Okay. That's our relevance to this game. But this game and this sort of AI battle that Fishman could talk about a lot better than I could, and et cetera, like that's a much bigger game. the second thing towards the gray water plant, because that's the relevant thing that's going to be pressing before us, and the city council tabled that vote until next Tuesday, so we're probably going to be talking about it again next week, is Memphis and Shelby County sit on the upper Claiborne Aquifer. We call it the Memphis Sand Aquifer. It's one of the greatest freshwater drinking supplies in the entire world. Right now, millions and millions of gallons of that water is used every single day by heavy industry, including XAI, but particularly the Tennessee Valley Authority, to cool down industrial processes. What Elon Musk's XAI is proposing is to build, with their capital, a gray water plant and a water recycling facility. Sorry, a cat's trying to climb me and didn't like when I was trying to remove him. If anyone heard that. Is essentially, that would take a ton of this water that we're using, fresh water that you and I can drink, or future generations can drink, okay? And replacing it with the wastewater that I'm going to put down the drain when we're done with this interview, okay? Right. And essentially cooling it that way. And so the pushback, to your point, is A, Elon Musk came to Memphis, Tennessee, and sank billions of dollars. You know, the number could be $12 billion. It could be more at this point, into Memphis with really no government approvals needed, okay? He needed basic permitting. Permitting that, you know, your average gas station, your average residential home would use. Different permitting processes, but I'm just trying to use that point.
Yep.
He came to the Memphis City Council. His company came to the City Council for the first time last week, okay? And so the Memphis City Council, which likes to have its voice heard, okay, as a collective, hasn't been happy about that. They haven't been happy that they didn't get to vote on any of the decisions that Elon Musk has made. And so there is a certain amount of punishment that's going to come with that. At the same time, what I would pose to everyone is this is a lot like a lot of other things. Maybe, for example, the transfer of Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium that was once paused and then all of a sudden swam through very clearly, right, in very calm waters at the end of the day. The votes are likely there for this gray water facility, okay? And so this might just be a momentary bump in the road. I will note that, you know, MLGW CEO Doug McGowan, who has, you know, had to handle this project because the utility is really the entity that has had to deal with XAI the most, threw his support behind the project again last week. He supported it from the beginning, but he said, essentially, this is the right thing to do. It's going to cost my utility, MLGW, money because we're going to sell less water to people, but we should preserve the water. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but that's what he's saying. And environmental activists have said, this is a good idea. We don't love the process. We don't love the secrecy that we've seen from XAI and other facets of this. But this is good because it's going to save water. And so that's what we're talking about here, is we're talking about really saving water versus, yes, there is a lot. This is a very polarizing person, okay, Elon Musk, obviously. Like, duh, Sam, great job. Yep. Way to provide analysis. But that's where we are.
Sam, we really appreciate it, buddy. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
That is Sam Hardiman, enterprise and government reporter for the Daily Memphian. George, let's go ahead and hit the end of the show music. Let's tell everybody what's coming up next here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Fox Sports, as well as Field of 68, all-time college basketball personality John Fanta is going to join their program at 11:25. Norton Hurd will be with the guys at 1:25. Tim Murray joins me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company, CJ Hurt, during hour number two. Gabe will be live from 4 to 7, also late night for the Grizzlies pregame, 9 p.m. with G-Darb, tip-off at 9:30, last game before the All-Star break. Want to thank George Ruggiero for keeping the program running. We're going to try to do better tomorrow, but for now, our work here is done.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget.
Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.